R. Sachs. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I want to look at this two Barbados, if you don't mind. I've heard the discussion this morning.
No, it's not a quarrel with me today.
No, I'm going to quarrel with you, Mr. Ellis. I want to tell those people, too, that Tammy shouldn't call you. That as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to call you because I find I get your blood pressure up.
Mine?
Yeah. I find
that. But the only thing that gets my blood pressure up is when I think that yours is up or you walk up on the wrong side of the bed. And then all of a sudden, it becomes a personal thing with me. I mean, I don't need to go there. All I need to deal with is the central issues in the country. This thing about who we are, and where you shop, and where you just drink, and where you go, that has got nothing to do with me. And therefore, when we talk with the public, it ain't got nothing to do with them either.
All right, Ms. Ellis, I want to talk to you, but I often say that when you expect the first shot, you expect that we play. Let me explain what I'm saying to you, right? 63 years ago, Barbados was a country, as we were talking about this, two Barbados. Because at that time, my memory goes back to tell me we were suffering from a color problem. Those were the early days when they started to work in Bridgetown. Two Barbados is where color was identified. It was either white or it was black, and then you had a situation between there. Some mulatto people was given some recognition in a period of time. We have since seen a Barbados now of two Barbados in the sense of who you're supposed to be, where you live, and what car you drive. So you have a situation here in Barbados now that we will always have what is considered to be two Barbados. This does not stop people from surviving. As a matter of fact, there's some decency in this exercise. But what I find is extremely annoying that, you know, that people seem to resent on situations and other people are not brought into it. We are more cosmopolitan country now than we can consider to be two Barbados, of black or white or wealthy and poor. We have got all types of nationalities living among us now. We have got Asians, we have got Chinese, we've got all types of people living around us. So similar to what your caller said earlier, that Barbados, as far as he's concerned, there's several other people. You and I know, Mr. Ellis, that over the years we've seen a lot of different people come and make living in Barbados. What I think is important is that a lot of material that should be brought to fore, that should be put out there for people to read, are stifled. And I don't know why it is stifled, because of who the persons are or who the persons are, the comments are made about. But this is one of the conditions that people in Barbados feel that law people, and you said it last week, Mr. Ellis, I can remind you, because you said it and I felt proud of it. You said that whenever I call the calling program, I see me put in a case for small people. Yes, because if small people does not have somebody to put a case for them, then the case will not be put. And I think that you are perfectly right when you say that. There are other people out there like me who believe that somewhere along the line, even yourself sometimes, that small people don't have a voice. And until we understand that small people have a voice, and until we understand that black people have a voice and white people have a voice, we cannot go with saying that Barbados is not two Barbados. You know that. It is two Barbados until we understand what is happening and siphon out these two Barbados in terms of who you come, where you live, where you live.
You know, the difficulty with people who just pick up the cause of the poor is you run into problems when they pick up the cause just for the sake thereof, rather than looking critically at whether there is indeed a case. Because you can also pick up that cause in such a way that it is terribly disadvantageous to other people. For instance, when we talked the other day about the Swan Street situation, there are people in Swan Street who have to pay property taxes. They have to pay for water and light and all of them things too. Those people feel disadvantaged when other people can just come in on a daily basis and take advantage of that space. They don't have any of those overheads, but they are being asked to pay them. So for them, that's discriminatory. That's disadvantageous. But they can't say so because they are considered to be bigger people. They are supposed to be able to afford it. In other words, they are the ones who are supposed to subsidize those people who cannot afford what they can. And they cannot utter a word because a majority of people are likely to turn on them and say, you are not in a position to speak like this. You understand?
Let me say, Mr. Ellis, to you, probably we might have misunderstood along the line, but let me say what it was saying. And I want it to be clear that as far as vending is concerned, and hearing what was said by the minister in relation to vending, that it was not criminalized, I am of the opinion that vending need to be regularized. I think you would agree with me on this. I believe that the same way you issued a permit by the Markets Association and a permit by the MTW to sell on the street, you should be offered some sort of identity, that you should be given an ID card. Some people do have ID cards, but they don't show it. I believe that sometime back, Mr. Ellis, I think you could assert to this, that people were given allocated spaces in small streets. And since that is the case, those people should maintain those allocated spaces that have been given to them and don't move off of that. Now, what I was trying to explain, that the competition in Swansea is so great. I want you to listen to this. The competition in Swansea is so great that it is not only the vendors now. The stores have found themselves having to compete with the vendors outside, and they know we're moving some of the interior of the store to sell on the outside. And this is all I'm asking. If it's regulated, you will not have this competition going between the store owner, because in front of his store is blocked. You will have the situation where the store owner has to pay VAT and have to pay all this, and the person who is selling outside does not have to pay. Everybody should fall in the net. And if you're a vendor, you should be registered with the VAT office. You should be calculated at the end of the day what your sales were. You should be looking at a position and be able to, if the police come to you and say, well, may I see your license? And you're supposed to be at block one and you're block four, move you back to block four. You agree with that?
Yeah, I think it needs to be regularized. And that's a principal issue, because you don't want to, you recognize that there's this explosion in the number of people who want to be on their own unemployment and all of that. And people also have a lot of problems sometimes working with others. And, you know, they prefer to be on their own. So you want to encourage that. And many people, I mean, I just the other day talked to a woman who, she makes sweet bread and she does some other stuff. And she operates virtually on her own. Mm. And she takes her bread to the gas station, auto marts and that sort of thing. And you can see how she has been able to move from one stage to the next, having found herself at one stage working for other people. But over the years, she has been doing pretty well and feels quite comfortable working for herself. Indeed, when I asked her about loans and that sort of thing, she said she's never taken a loan to develop her business.
That's beautiful.
And she's doing a combination of jewelry on the one hand and baking bread as well. Now, those people need to be encouraged, and there are opportunities there for others. But it still has to be done in a way that is well regulated and respects the fact that you can't go and discriminate against other people in that kind of direct way, all on the basis of saying that you want to look after the interests of poor people. You know, because the person who is working today on the street has the potential to be working from the store in a couple of years from now, feeling that same sense of disadvantage and discrimination. You know? It's difficult. Thanks very much for calling. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
First, I want to thank the members of the Royal Barbados Police Force for a job well done. And I think that should put an end to rumors that was going on in this country for a long, long, long time, and done with that. I'm going to ask you a question, a very simple question. If you had a tree that poses a threat to your house, would you just trim the limbs or would you cut down the tree?
It depends.
Hello?
You know, that depends upon whether I value the tree or not. I mean, if it was a climate cherry tree, I might cut it down. If it's an Aki tree, I might trim the leaves.
It poses
the limbs.
A threat to you and your family, safety wise. For me, Aki tree, go on an apple tree, it got to get cut down. I'll be done with that.
You would cut it down? Just so?
Yes.
Suppose it was a golden apple tree that you used to get fruit from to sell at various points.
Well,
would you cut it down?
As I say, it's a threat to the safety of me and my family, it can get cut down.
Well, right? if it can pose a threat depending upon where the limbs are. If the limbs are a major part of the threat, then why cut down the tree only to deal with a couple of limbs?
No, it's not the limbs that I'm talking about. It's the tree.
It's the tree itself.
The whole tree coming down from my house and killing me and my family. I dealt with that part.
Well, if it was posing that kind of threat, then naturally we would say eliminate the tree. If it is going to be, if the tree itself is a threat, for instance, you can have some of these golden apple trees that are rotting. And, you know, even a mahogany tree, if that's posing that kind of threat, you will got to bring it down.
Let me go on to my next thing now. What makes a person an illegal vendor in some cases, not all in some? Let me tell you something, right? What can make a person an illegal vendor? Going to the place where you should get the permit and being denied the permit. Now, there's a word near survival that some people tend not to remember. And when mankind is driven to that point, they will do anything or almost anything to survive. It's either survive or die. I done with that there too. The next one, run away from problems. Don't always make the problem go away. Sometimes you have to stand and deal with the problem. Don't matter what the outcome, you have to do it. A lot of things that some people are trying to see finally the carpet and make believe it don't exist anymore in Barbados, it does exist. And we have to deal with it. I notice that whenever we as a black people go out talk about certain things, we are always accused of being racist. Always. My next, I would like you to get a pencil on and a piece of paper and write down numbers I'm going to give you.
For what? Lotto? Lotto
you
numbers?
You, my man, you write down numbers,
right? You hear how the man speaking to me? My man, write down the numbers. Let me hear you.
79.
Hold on a minute. I want to see what this taking me. 79.
148.
It sounds like, these are our numbers?
You just write down the numbers.
Hold on a minute. I need to bring up this, the document here, the word document, so that I could do that. So it's
79 148 148 149 yes 218 208 208 223 168 188 373 267 323 323 Hold on, 323 313 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 323 John, you hold on, right? These are all permits that were issued by the last administration to compete against Transport Board on one bus route. One day the bypass. Tell me what chance did Transport Board have against them? That's all.
All right,
I made a promise. I'm not going to attack the new thing that, as I said, the past administration.
Why?
Just gets an attempt vote. I go give them a chance. The man just can't come and attack you. I'm going to give them a chance. I told you I'm going to give them to year end and the month of January to get at least the majority of things right. And I intend to hold fast on my promise. The numbers I give you was issued in the last administration with the last minister and the one before him. I just gave you and the public a lot to think about. You see, what people don't realize, right? As Transport Board drivers are not bringing the required revenue sooner or later. I know the present prime minister is trying hard not to send home anybody. But at the rate it was going, those people just were at risk. I spoke to the General Secretary at the BWU, and the General or the President at the NUPW did something that should have caused by now the NUPW to be memberless. I remember when people were being reverted, no action was taken. It was all talk. When the President himself got reverted, he was calling for a national shutdown. Can't tell what we as the people that way to this place is a true place. Have a nice day.
Thank you very much. Down to Brass Sacks. You're on the air. It's 11:43. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
I would like to get the program, please.
You're on the air. Turn your radio down or off. You're on the program.
Hello, good morning. That man that now called, he's telling lies.
How so?
It's 11:43. Hello?
Turn off your radio, please. Down to Brass Stacks. Hello? Well, you decided to call her. Yes. 4341790. That's the number for you to call. Hello?
Yes, I had to call already, but I had to drop out.
What happened?
Oh, you know, I did a long, long, long.
Okay. We wanted to talk about.
I'm talking about the bus stand, the buses.
Talk to me. Where you live?
I live in Society St. John.
Mm-hmm.
And from a Saturday, Monday to Friday, you work. You go work 8 hours. You left one early, right?
Yeah.
You get back home, night time. You go on the bus stand. Friday, I come in the bus stand at 2:22. The bus leave supposed to be 2:30. It leave at 2:22. That miss you. You know what time I get a bus, Mr. Ellis?
No, tell me.
7:25 then.
And when this happened?
On Friday. And then on Saturday, let me give you the big joke. Then I got a lot of people that in transport board don't know what's going on, and they know how to run the bus stand. But Saturday, they had no 6:30, no 7:30, no 8:30, no 9:30. The bus come in for 10, it went Society and call us Savannah for 10. When I get out the bus that come to two places, when I send another bus that is go Bormiston 10:15 every night. It is good 10:15 Bormiston and Society. That makes sense to you?
And this is new, or is this part of what you have had to experience for quite some time?
But listen to me,
Has it gotten worse?
They have certain inspectors. You could call upon them. They will answer you. They will say, well, we experienced a problem, but we will help you. They got one there that now come. I don't know where to bring from. I understand he come from Spikestown. He won't go back down there because he don't know how to run this big terminal. He needs Spikestown.
Yeah, all right, but let's deal with how it has changed.
Right.
You know full well that there are people from St. John who have been complaining about bus service for quite some time.
Yes.
When did you notice the change, and how did it change?
Well, all right, let me tell you, how did it change? Well, it changed when they moved around some of the supervisors.
So that is, for you, that is a very critical part of it, because the supervisors who come to do this particular job need to be conscious of what is required to get the people from one place to the next. And the minute that you've come from a different area, you can sometimes have a different emphasis.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. But I mean, Mr. Ellis, when you come home, you're so tired.
I can understand that.
Look, Mr. Ellis, you left home on morning 5:30. You come in the bus stand to get a 3:30 or 4:30 bus. When you look, you see Martins Bay ghetto buses, Sam Lawrence, Dash Valley, the other, and Society people stand up there and do not say a word, Mr.
Not even you?
Well, I can tell you something. can tell you something, because when I say now, listen, what's going on? Sometimes you see people, the supervisor, a certain supervisor, I can call upon.
Don't hammer their names that much. But
I tell certain yeah. that you can call upon that will give you a bus. The next time, cutting stars, cutting bare stars, you know, and you are there, putting your foot when you get home, is that it's you sweater. All you do, drop your bag, take off your clothes, put it in the basket, and like, don't cross the bed for half of it. Something you get an hour, when you get it's 10, 11 o'clock, you are so tired.
And you need to share with us, you know, the kind of things that stops you from doing. I mean, if you get home at that kind of time and you're so tired, just preparing for the next day is also your setback, you know?
Yes. Look, Mr. Ellis.
How long has this been happening for you?
Look, what can I do? A long time?
But how long is a long time, though?
Well, this is about a year or so. And the point is, when the passengers see me come in the line, there was some, let she come in, because we will get a bus. So they get so frustrated.
Because you talk a lot. Once you're there, you know, they know you can keep noise.
Yes, I will get a bus. But, Ms. Ellis, but this thing had me so upset Friday and Saturday. I mean, back to back. You leave work and you cannot get home. When you look at 10 o'clock society, call it Savannah. When you look at Bormiston society, 10:15. That do not make sense, because look, the bus that comes for 9 o'clock the night, that supervisor could have doubled society and call it Savannah, get off the people that was there for 10:15.
They got to hire you as a supervisor.
that is the secret in there.
The secret is the knowledge of how to deploy the buses.
That is the secret in there.
But that's really interesting, you know, to see how the person who is the passenger can be looking at it and giving all these ideas about how they believe it can be improved. The question is, has anybody from Transport Board ever sat down with you and explained why they do the things the way that they do them?
Listen,
I bet you're not.
That is the secret.
With somebody as vocal as you, you need that kind of interaction.
Of course. No, listen.
You know, they should bring you to the Transport Board a day and ask you, you know, ask that your employer give you a little bit of time so that you could commit to the heartbeat of the Transport Board. And get a better sense of what they have to go through. Because that matters, you know. Sometimes you're looking at it from one angle only.
Yes. But listen, when you come to a place like that, right, I could turn that inside outside my hand.
I tell you. What do you normally do for a living? Can I ask that?
All right, let me tell you what I normally do. Mm-hmm. I do housekeeping.
Okay.
Right. But if you'd have talked to me off the air, I would tell you what I used to do.
Okay.
Right. But
and your housekeeping job would mean that you have to get another bus?
Yes, I do.
So you have to get two buses?
I do four buses on a daily basis.
Four buses, ma'am?
Yes, please. Two coming and two going.
Two going. Wow.
Yes. Two coming and two going.
And how long have you been doing this?
2 years now, Rennie. After I get terminated in 2014.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what I tell you. That's a long story.
Oh, that's another story altogether.
Altogether.
All right, dear. Thank you very much for calling, and I sincerely hope that the people at the Transport Board, I am sure they know your voice by now. And they really should reach out to you a little bit, because clearly you got some influence. As long as you get in the line, people expect that they will be represented. So they should know you well enough now to say, listen, come in here and let me show you how this thing really works. You know, reach out to you a little bit, all right? You mean well. Thank you very much. On to brass tacks now. A couple of people who said that they enjoyed the contribution of this person who just called us, who said she was a lady from society in St. John. Somebody thinks that she's a previous worker of the Transport Board. And then there's one other person who says the caller is saying nothing but the truth. They say that after 5 in the afternoon, after it passes, that time passes in the bus terminal and you're going to the countryside, you could as well walk with a pillow or some playing cards, because you're going to be there long, especially Sergeant Street. Nothing but the truth. They say that after 5 in the afternoon, after it passes, that time passes in the bus terminal and you're going to the countryside, you could as well walk with a pillow or some playing cards, because you're going to be there long, especially Sergeant Street. This other person says the bus system is a mess and it is uncomfortable to everyone. Martins Bay doesn't have a good time at it at all. Several days people wait from 11 to 2 for a bus, and when they get home, it is like no energy to do anything. But then this person who believes that the person who spoke with us is a previous worker, a former worker of the transport board, says that what she's talking about don't work so. And this person says you have to understand this. The person says, I'm not trying to be political, but you have to blame the last administration for the situation of the transport board. This company, for my knowledge, well, I wouldn't want to use the term that they've used there, but they felt that a lot better could be done in this regard. So for us, though, remember, we are paying more because the government has said to us that one of its principal, its mission critical issues has been trying to get buses for the transport board. So we need to find out from government, basically, where are we in that process? Because I'm sure most people would be anxious to hear exactly when are we likely to see an ease in this situation. The new government has blamed the failure of the former administration to replace buses. But you and I know that even though that may be so, then there's still the age-old problem that they have had with respect to UCAL. We've had no discussion whatsoever about that aspect of the problem. And more significantly, the maintenance challenge facing the transport board. That maintenance challenge would be exacerbated because you have old vehicles. But whether you have old or new, you still have to deal with the maintenance challenge. And the Minister of Transport and those who are working closely with him really need to talk about some of these things. Having said that, I also want to make this point. This government has seen the Prime Minister take the lead in coming forward, having news conferences, trying to communicate with the public. But we make a big mistake if we wrap too much of this around that particular office. With all these ministers that we have here, one expects that more of them are going to understand that the Prime Minister is only taking the lead, and that they too have a responsibility to let people know what is going on a timely basis. So I hope that, you can't put that responsibility exclusively at the feet of a Prime Minister in today's world. So I sincerely hope that on this question of transport, public transport, that the relevant minister and the people working closely with that minister recognize that people need an update. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?